Welcome to the Tom Dupree Show, brought to you by Dupree Financial Group. Here's our host, Tom Dupree.
So when did the NCAA use this song about the Final Four? You remember several years ago? I think it was when Patrick Ewing was playing.
That was a long time ago.
A long time ago. But anyway, this is... One more night, you know, you got four teams left, and none of them are Kentucky. Kentucky beat one of them. When Tennessee was in it, Kentucky had beaten two of them. And when North Carolina was in it, Kentucky had beaten three of them. But we couldn't get past whatever their name was, Oakland.
And not California.
Did you notice that... the fellow that hit all the threes against us was in that three-point, derby they have. What's it called where they all shoot for threes? Anyway, yeah. We made a star out of that guy.
What happened to him in the three-point competition?
I don't think he won it, but anyway, he got
in
there.
Well, the next game that they were in, he didn't have the same effect.
Well, they figured it out, which we couldn't do. Anyway, do I sound better? No, not me. Okay, here's my psalm. Psalm 61. Hear my cry, O God. Attend unto my prayer. That means listen. Attend means listen in the King James. From the end of the earth I will cry unto thee when my heart is overwhelmed. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. What's a rock? A rock is something of stability. So that means that whatever I'm dealing with is not as stable as a rock is. So if I want to hold on to a rock, I pray to God. Verse 3, for thou hast been a shelter for me and a strong tower from the enemy. Those two things also have synonymous meanings with a rock or something steady, something that is dependable. And then verse 4, I will abide in thy tabernacle forever. I will trust in the covert of thy wings. Selah. Okay, that means take a break. I want to deal with something in the news that has captured everybody's attention here recently, and that would be the deaths of seven aid workers in the Gaza Strip who were bringing aid to Palestinians, and they were killed, it appears, in a drone attack while they were attempting to serve meals. Now, there are evidently quite a few different groups involved in humanitarian aid throughout the world. We've supported one of these groups. That means Elizabeth and myself, called Mercy Chefs, C-H-E-F-S. And we've had Gary LeBlanc on our show at least three times. We have supported the work of Mercy Chefs financially. We have tried to advertise about them and tell people about what they do. Mercy Chefs has remained uninvolved from politics, meaning that they don't take partisan stands on things, despite what the politics of the founders and the people that run it may be. They don't let the politics side of things bleed over into what they're doing. They believe that they are there to feed people, as Jesus would have fed them, and not get involved in partisan politics. The other thing is, you know, I've gotten to know Gary and Ann, the directors of that organization. I know quite well that they are never going to put their team members in the line of fire and expose them to a combat zone, an area where there's fighting going on, because it's just not what they do. They don't believe that they are designed to take food and aid into a combat zone. So it's easy to look at a lot of these different aid groups out there and sort of not differentiate between them and think, well, one's sort of the same as the other. The people that died in this attack were with an organization called World Central Kitchen. World Central Kitchen is based in Washington, D.C. Mercy Chefs is based in Portsmouth, Virginia, which is Southern Virginia. And, you know, this is a horrible thing, what happened, the death of seven aid workers. I want to talk a little bit about this World Central Kitchen, which, it's interesting, the guy that founded it is a fellow named Jose Maria Andres. And he's a guy that has Jose Andres has lived in Washington, D.C. for a long time. And Washington, D.C., if nothing else, is a center of politics. It's a center of power throughout the world. And Jose Andres was trained in Spain. He moved to D.C. at age 21. And he was a chef and a restaurateur, and he really, it appears, started thinking, this is from their website, started thinking big about philanthropy, and he saw the power of food to change the world. Okay, so it means that food, and this is based on their own website, was going to be a tool for change. Now, I'd like to contrast that with Mercy Chefs, which is the one that I know about and have contributed to. Their goal is not to use food as a vehicle for change. Their goal is to simply feed people out of love. So we gotta draw the line there. We are dealing with the World Central Kitchen as a Washington, D.C. based entity. So let's start there. Washington, D.C. is an enclave that in the last election probably went 93-7 for Biden, something like that. 93% of Washington residents voted for Joe Biden. But evidently this guy, Jose Andres, lives in Maryland. Guess who his congressman is? And the guy who has been one of the most radical members of Congress and is now interjecting himself into this whole thing. It's a guy named Jamie Raskin. Well, if you want to see the definition of radical, you just look up Jamie Raskin. So this is a Washington, D.C. based organization who says on their website that they're using food as a way to change the world, which tells you that they have an agenda. And if it's based in D.C., that agenda is going to be a political agenda, because by its very nature, everything that comes out of D.C. is political. You can just bet on that one. Let's look at some of the people on the board of World Central Kitchens. So here's a guy named Rob Wilder. Rob Wilder, along with Chef Jose Andres, is the co-founder of Think Food Group, the innovative management of it's a restaurant management organization. They have a bunch of restaurants throughout the United States. They also co-founded World Central Kitchen with Jose in 2010 after deciding together that no existing food NGO, that means non-governmental organization, which guess what it means? Governmental organization. Most NGOs, that if something calls itself an NGO, it's because it's basically aiding and abetting some kind of government, and they want you to know that, oh, you can actually donate to us. That no existing food NGO was solving problems as they would as chef and entrepreneur. And these guys have been involved in food technology, and you know, that's truly an entrepreneurial way of going at it. Here's another board member, a guy named Christopher Cowan of World Central Kitchen. Christopher Cowan is the director of international project finance for the U.S. International Development Finance Corporation, a self-sustaining agency of the U.S. government based in Washington, D.C., that provides financing and political risk insurance for companies investing in emerging markets of Asia, Africa, Latin America, Eastern Europe, and the Middle East. Chris has over 20 years of banking experience and is currently focused on financing small and medium enterprises in OPIC's finance department. Okay, he approves loans, and he helps ensure companies' political risk insurance. What would that mean? Oh, I don't know. War? Upheaval? So actually, you know, knows how to finance companies that are in these kind of areas. Here's another board member, Jean-Marc de Mateus. Jean-Marc is the CEO of de Mateus Corporation Group Haiti. DCG Haiti is a full-service design build firm that executes turnkey institutional and private construction projects throughout Haiti. Oh, wow. That's a very honest country. No problems there. Here's a guy named Ray Mabus, who served as the Secretary of the Navy, who was the governor of Mississippi from 88 to 92 and ambassador of Saudi America. CEO of Mabus Group, a strategic advisory firm, probably a lobbying firm. Oh, he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, several different things. So this is another Beltway insider. And we can go down the list. There are other people that are involved in this thing. Most of them look like they are left-wing political types. Because if it's DC, and if they're involved in politics, it's almost a given that it's going to be Democrat politics. We've already said that our goal is for political change. Now, as if on cue, the World Central Kitchen has already prepared a lengthy statement about the attack on its seven workers. It's called the World Central Statement Kitchen's statement about the IDF preliminary investigation. The IDF has acknowledged its responsibility and fatal errors in the deadly attack on our convoy in Gaza. It's also taking disciplinary action. However, it's also clear that the IDF has deployed deadly force without regard to its own protocols, chain of command, and rules of engagement. Hey, it's a war. It is a war. It is not. Your convoy cannot be considered off limits to the fact that we're in a war. And then they make a statement, without systemic change, there will be more military failures, more apologies, and grieving families. And guess what? As if on cue, we also now have an article in the Wall Street Journal, who they have a way these days of getting sucked in, because, you know, they got their own bunch of bleeding hearts, and they're talking about how Jose Andres, the head of the World Central Kitchen, is already pushing for change in Israel and basically a demilitarization. Jose Andres is channeling his grief and influence to channel to change Israel policy. So all of a sudden, Jose Andres, who on Tuesday spoke with President Biden, who considers him a friend, in a private phone conversation before telling Reuters that the president's policy of arming Israel while trying to get more aid into Gaza is very complicated to understand. Andres demanded Israel stop this indiscriminate killing in a tweet to his 1 million followers. In an op-ed published Wednesday in the New York Times and in Israel's largest newspaper, Yedioth Ahronoth, he wrote that the war can't be won by starving an entire population. Israel is better than the way this war is being waged. Guess what? It is a war. Now, I don't take sides one way or the other. I'm not condoning Israel's behavior. But what I want to say here is that the World Central Kitchen is anything but an organization purely designed to bring food to starving people.
You've been listening to The Tom Dupree Show, brought to you by Dupree Financial Group. If you'd like to hear more of The Tom Dupree Show, you can go to our website at dupreefinancial.com and click on the radio tab. We'll be back with more in just a few minutes. Stay tuned.
It's more than a contest, it's more than a contest.
That's it! The Owls of Florida Atlantic! They're headed to the Final Four!
The biggest win in Hurricane Hoops history. Miami heading to the Final Four. 2 seconds. He's hot! San Diego State is going to the Final Four!
It's done.
Welcome back to the Tom Dupree Show, brought to you by Dupree Financial Group. Here's our host, Tom Dupree.
Final Four weekend has always been a big deal in our household. And this Final Four weekend is no different. We're all together. And we'll be watching the games and enjoying each other's company because we all have a very special connection to the Final Four and have for years. So best to whoever wins it. You know, my money's on UConn, but it isn't money.
I'm rooting on for North Carolina State.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a real interesting story there.
I like the story, and I love one of the players. I think he's captured America's heart.
Well, I know he's captured your heart, so that doesn't.
I'm not the only one.
Mean America,
my but boy. Anyway. My boy DJ, as our older son calls him, the dog.
Yeah. All right. I want to read something. I'm going to change directions from what I covered in the first half hour. This is from the American Spectator. This came out, I think, around March 28th. It's now just called The Spectator, spectator.org. Those who get rich, and it's written by a lady named Ellie Gardey, G-A-R-D-E-Y. Those who get rich off turning young Americans into addicted losers who contribute nothing to society have met a roadblock. Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin. On Thursday, Youngkin vetoed a bill that would have legalized the sale of marijuana in the state of Virginia. His explanation for the veto summarizes well the negative consequences faced by other states that legalized marijuana. States following this path, he said, have seen adverse effects on children's and adolescents' health and safety, increased gang activity and violent crime, significant deterioration in mental health, decreased road safety, and significant costs associated with retail marijuana that far exceeded tax revenue. Youngkin's recognition of the obvious that marijuana legalization is demonstrably bad for society is sorely needed at this time when the marijuana industry deploys endless lobbyists and PR campaigns to claim that legalization has a net benefit. Marijuana's harmfulness starts with just that. It is inherently harmful. According to the Yale School of Medicine, 30% of marijuana users have cannabis use disorder, i.e., they are addicted to the drug. Another study published in the International Journal of Drug Policy has found that 44% of people who've smoked marijuana have gone on to use other illegal drugs. 44%, but they say it's not a gateway drug. And yes, marijuana is still illegal under federal law as it is classified as a Schedule I drug. According to the Department of Health and Human Services Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, marijuana use is linked to depression, anxiety, suicide planning, and psychotic episodes. And people who use marijuana are more likely to have relationship problems, worse educational outcomes, lower career achievement, and reduced life satisfaction. This is from the Department of Health and Human Services. It's on their website. It's not some right-wing diatribe. Marijuana is also not helpful as a medical treatment. Cannabis has never been shown to be beneficial for the ailments it is often used to treat: pain, depression, and anxiety. Glenn Youngkin rightly drew attention to the negative consequences that have legalized marijuana, that states that have legalized marijuana have experienced. These consequences are well documented. According to the Journal of Criminal Justice, recreational marijuana legalization has increased property and violent crime in Oregon. In Oregon, I talked to a guy recently on an airplane who lived in Oregon. He says it is turned into a complete hellhole, a place you would not want to live. In addition, Colorado's Department of Public Safety noted that in 2021, that since legalization, the state had seen an increase in marijuana-related hospitalizations, emergency room visits, poison control calls, DUIs, and fatal crashes where drivers tested positive for cannabinoids. There is also the fact that legalization of marijuana increases usage of the drug among minors who are particularly negatively affected by the drug. In fact, people who use marijuana as adolescents can experience a permanent loss of up to 8 IQ points. They are also at risk for developing psychosis and schizophrenia. Marijuana lobbyists have long claimed that legalization will create a cash cow of revenue for states. There has been doubt cast on this claim, however. A study published in the National Tax Journal concluded that cannabis revenues cannibalize other tax revenues, since legalizing cannabis results in a 15% decrease in sales of alcohol and a 5% decrease in the sale of cigarettes. In addition, there are the numerous other costs states must take on when they let people run wild with a dangerous and extremely addictive drug, including increased policing costs. States have also been surprised by the low amount of revenue generated by cannabis sales. For example, the state of California, which now has a $122 billion deficit under Democrat Governor Gavin Newsom. California has had to make changes to its budgets after expected tax revenues from cannabis have been well below expectations. Glenn Youngkin is one of the few governors to see the light in a country full of politicians, state politicians, working to legalize marijuana or who have already done so. Much of the responsibility for this movement lies with another governor. I just mentioned him, Newsom. When Governor Newsom was Lieutenant Governor of California, he was one of the first politicians to come out in favor of marijuana legalization. From there, he spearheaded a committee whose purpose was to demonstrate that marijuana legalization could be implemented in a way that minimizes any potential harms for society. That committee was influential in convincing other states that marijuana could be safely adopted at a time when it was becoming clear that many harmful consequences were resulting from legalization. Youngkin said he never even considered signing the bill to legalize pot. When he was asked last week whether he would do so, he said, "Anybody who thinks I'm going to sign that legislation must have been smoking something." Bravo, Glenn Youngkin. All right, that's an article from The Spectator. Now, let me just state my anecdotal experiences over the last 50 years. When I was 15 years old, which is exactly 52 years ago, marijuana was really catching on big. The average person wasn't a smoker, but I was in a group of folks that did. I had a very negative experience with it. Stopped doing it at age 15. And people I know that went on to smoke pot for long periods of time, I would say have experienced a lot of those negative consequences that were just stated in that article. A numerous amount of these things. One friend in particular of mine who has now essentially become non-communicative, living somewhere up in the mountains, doesn't talk to any of his older friends, doesn't return texts. This is a regular marijuana user. Now, about 3 weeks ago, there was a thing on TV involving the Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris, who came from the exact same political family as Gavin Newsom, where she had a sort of a round table at the White House about the need to get marijuana legalized throughout the country. At that round table was some dude who was a marijuana industry spokesman, probably owned one of these cannabis companies, and there were other assorted goofballs, and sitting right on her left hand was our boy governor, Andy Beshear. Front and center at Vice President Kamala Harris's marijuana roundtable. What came out of that roundtable was, we need to get on the stick and get marijuana legalized. We're not talking medical marijuana, which is a joke in and of itself, but we're talking full legalization of marijuana. And Governor Andy Beshear was sitting right there nodding and just eating it up right in the deal. This is your governor, folks who live in the state of Kentucky. He is carrying the ball for these kinds of failed policies, whereas the governor one state over in Virginia is smart enough to see that this is not good for the state of Kentucky. I cannot tell you how often I hear from people who say, Andy Beshear's a good governor. Okay, go for it. The only thing more ineffective in this state than the Democrat administration that we have is the Kentucky Republican Party. And the joke candidate that they ran against Beshear in the last election, the guy that just, the candidate that was supposed to show up and never did. So I can't completely blame the voters for this one, because they had a guy who really never campaigned much, and that would have been Daniel Cameron. What a wasted chance that the Republicans had to actually put somebody in there that would have been good for the state of Kentucky. Matt Bevin, despite all his personal failings and the fact that he was just a jackass, actually enacted several policies that were really effective. We do have a Republican-controlled legislature that is doing some really excellent things, and maybe one day we get a governor. But I'm just going to tell you, this is not a good policy. We're going down that path. We're going to go there. A lot of Republicans are on board with it in the legislature because there's money in it. And whenever politicians are greeted with lobbyists and companies bearing promised dollars, they're going to go for it. And it doesn't matter if they're Republican or Democrat. They see the dollars and they think there's money there. But it's just like the lottery. The lottery is the worst idea that we could have ever had, but they see it as free money. All it does is put a tax on people who can't afford to play the lottery, that do play it, thinking that at some point they're going to, you know, hit a home run. So
you sound like you're a Republican.
No, I'm saying I am not a Republican. I'm saying that in this case, that's the only offset to these stupid-ass policies. You know, I'm not a member of a political party because I'm like Thomas Jefferson. I think they do more harm than good. I like people, but now that are based on their ideas, the Republicans did not run a legitimate contender against, this was an empty suit, this guy was. You know, if we could get a real conservative, somebody that's really a conservative running, they'd win with 60% of the vote.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I think that...
Well, you're just not in touch. I am.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad we cleared that up, too.
No, I mean, I know the average person, and they're going to be real surprised in November when they see what happens. But we're not in November yet.
And you're talking on the national stage with that one.
Yeah, we're in the Final Four weekend, so we're not even to the Masters yet.
Well, so what happens next? You're talking about the national stage.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there yet. I'm talking right now about the fact that Kentucky is going down a plan that doesn't work because we think that there's money in it for the state. Politicians are whores. They are whores for money. you know, if you look at what happens to a politician when they get elected, within a few years, they become a professional fundraiser. That's what they do. You think that your congressman is out there legislating for Kentucky? No. What your congressman is doing is going out and doing fundraisers. It's about getting our people elected. And you know the reason people aren't giving, you know the reason Trump doesn't have as much money as Biden? I'm going to tell you something. The Democrats are more honest about what they're going to do when they get elected than the Republicans are. And people are tired of giving money to Republicans and having them say, I'm going to do this, and then they do the opposite. The Democrats, you know what they say? I'm going to take away your freedoms. I'm going to tax you into oblivion. I'm going to regulate you to death. I'm going to take away your freedoms. And people say, great. Here's $100. It's all I can afford. I want you to do all these things to me. Because the big thing is I don't want that bad Donald Trump to get elected. I'm not worried about the fact that Biden is no good. I just want to make sure we don't elect Trump. And the Democrats do what they say they're going to do. The Republicans, you know, listen to Andy Barr. They say, you know, we're going to protect your freedoms. And then they turn around and give billions to Ukraine when our southern border gets no attention at all. And they tell you they're fighting for you. The reason for that is the party that's supposed to be standing up is actually the more dishonest of the two. They don't do what they say. And now you've got a bunch of Republicans. The only guy out there in politics I know that I've followed since 1987 that did what he said he's going to do is Donald Trump. You may not like it. You may not like the way he communicates with people. But you can't deny the fact that he didn't reverse himself and end up not doing what he said he was going to do. And every other politician does. So there you go.
Well, and then the other side of that coin is they're the other people running or working against him are the ones that are saying that he's the biggest liar, that he's full of lies.
The left and really everybody will always accuse. They will always accuse the enemy of doing exactly what they're doing. All you got to do is go back and read George Orwell's book, 1984. It's the same thing that the Democrats are doing nowadays. Anyway.
And what do I call that?
I don't know.
Hector the projector, right? Hector projector, where you project onto others what you're doing?
Yep.
You've been listening to the Tom Dupree Show. Brought to you by Dupree Financial Group. If you'd like to hear more of the Tom Dupree Show, you can go to our website at dupreefinancial.com and click on the radio tab. We appreciate you listening. We'll be up next with our financial hour. Stay tuned.
Rod Hunter has fallen off his stool.
Nothing feels better than this.
This is the point where